The trade fight between the U.S. and China has been dominating economic news in recent weeks. And it all started, or restarted really, when President Donald Trump announced tariffs on steel and aluminum from China last month. And the reason he gave for doing that?
We will safeguard the copyrights, patents, trademarks, trade secrets, and other intellectual property.
Intellectual property. The actual definition is a creation of the mind.
Whoa.
It's the idea behind a product, the innovation. And in fact, I have something to show you, Cardiff. It is a purchase I made on the boardwalk in Venice, California.
Let's see it.
Here they are.
Ah,
they're
lovely.
They are sunglasses. Thank you.
Aviators.
I'm very excited about them.
Slick.
So these are sunglasses, but this is also a piece of technology. The design, the color, the materials. This is a piece of intellectual property. And in this case, a piece of intellectual property from Ray-Ban. These are Ray-Ban Blaze Aviator Gold sunglasses, and they cost $173.
Oh, man. Worth it, though.
I did not actually pay $173 for them. I paid $10 for them. And you can see why, printed on the inside of the earpiece.
Yeah. Made in China.
Made
inside
in China.
Inside the earpiece.
So these sunglasses represent a piece of intellectual property that was stolen from a U.S. company by China. China is the number one culprit of intellectual property theft in the world right now. I am Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia. Intellectual property sounds like a modern concept. So you think of things like iPhones or eBay or drones, things like that. But actually, intellectual property disputes have been going on for hundreds of years. And in fact, the U.S. has its own complicated history with intellectual property.
The United States was actually stealing all kinds of stuff.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Swell Investing, an impact investing platform that identifies high-growth companies solving today's biggest global challenges, like clean water and renewable energy. Claim your $50 bonus through swellinvesting.com/money.
Back in the 1800s, the country with the really valuable intellectual property was not the United States. The good stuff back then belonged to Great Britain. Ken Rogoff is an economist at Harvard.
The U.S. was the fast-growing emerging market. Great Britain, England, they were the rich economy that was producing all the high-tech stuff. And we very freely used their ideas, didn't pay them for it.
The high-tech stuff back in the 1800s? Cloth. Who could make it faster and better and for less money? And the British dominated this industry. They had invented machines that could weave textiles at these breakneck speeds. They had giant mechanized looms. And merchants from the U.S. started taking these sort of innocent tours of British facilities, supposedly just to check them out.
Just moseying around.
Just, you know, seeing
having
the sights.
Having a gander, if you will.
This is so amazing, you guys. And then they went straight back to the U.S., ripped off the designs, and American entrepreneurs just started basically copying in every way they could. In fact, they were so shameless, they started publicly offering to pay British textile workers to become double agents and share any information or secrets they had, just publicly out there.
Industrial espionage.
Yeah.
I love it. The British launched major protests to the young U.S. government, which then did absolutely nothing. The U.S. textile industry just brazenly stole and thrived from the Brits.
But then after a while, we started being such a center of invention that we decided, oh, these international rules of the game are pretty good.
Yeah, I guess they are when you're the one being stolen from.
Starting to make a lot of sense.
Now that we've stolen all the British stuff, why don't we enforce some rules on our stuff, right? So the U.S. eventually got on board with global intellectual property laws because we started wanting to protect our own inventions. Ever since then, we've been self-righteously going after other countries like crazy.
Especially China. It's estimated the U.S. economy loses as much as $600 billion a year through intellectual property theft. And that is today's indicator, $600 billion. And this represents everything from semiconductors to self-driving cars to sunglasses. And Ken Rogoff says this is a huge deal.
My goodness, how are we going to have balanced trade with China? And not just China, how do we export to the rest of the world if they're able to take these high-tech capital goods we have, take them apart, and ultimately steal the intellectual capital.
The Chinese have planted moles in U.S. companies. They've hacked into computer systems to steal secrets. Boeing, Apple, DuPont, Ford, they've all gone after China for intellectual property theft.
So U.S. companies are losing money. This obviously damages the U.S. economy. What do we do? Ken says that's a tricky question because we want to have a good trade relationship with China. China is one of the biggest, wealthiest economies in the world. But that friendship is costly. And as the U.S. economy becomes more service-oriented, more software-based, says Ken, this is going to get really expensive.
We can't wait 20 years to figure out how to deal with them. If they keep stealing our intellectual property, we're going to have a very, very hard time maintaining our economic position.
Ken says this issue has been stumping U.S. presidents for decades.
That's like a real issue that President Obama worried about, President Bush, President Clinton. And we keep having these meetings and saying we were making a little progress, but I don't think we have been making that much progress.
Ken says there's been this longstanding idea that the Chinese economy will eventually just evolve out of intellectual property theft, like the U.S. economy did. But so far, that hasn't happened.
And then, of course, comes President Donald Trump, who's been saying for years that we should punish China until China starts taking more aggressive action to fight the stealing of U.S. intellectual property. Fundamentally, Ken says, this actually makes some sense. One of our biggest trading partners is stealing from us, and we're just standing there watching it happen. But again, the question arises, what do you do?
The U.S. is the richest economy, large economy in the world by far, and we have gotten there by turning the other cheek, by just, well, you want to sell something to us cheap? We'll take it.
Ken says, if you want to thrive in the global economy, you get biblical. Like New Testament biblical, not Old Testament biblical. Old Testament is more like what Trump has been doing.
Yes.
Turning the other cheek, though, seems kind of like a terrible idea. Sort of like sitting in a lawn chair watching someone rob your house and then buying a magazine subscription from them.
Wrong. Ken says the lawn chair approach is not a terrible idea. It's the best idea. And the reason is that when we do put tariffs on stuff that we're importing, that stuff gets more expensive. So like the tariffs on steel mean that U.S. car makers now have to pay more for that steel, and consequently, they also have to charge more for their cars. So U.S. consumers have to pay more for a car, and that means those consumers have less money to spend on other things.
When you raise prices for consumers, it means they have less money and less purchasing power, and you're making people poorer. And although it may seem small, it adds up.
But this is sticky, right? Because this pair of sunglasses that I bought for $10, they represent jobs too. I mean, at Ray-Ban, they are losing money because China swiped the design. So they have less money and they hire fewer people.
It is sticky because it means that we still don't have a great answer to the question, what do you do? What Ken is describing is what you don't do, which is put in tariffs, because when you balance it all out, that lawn chair approach is still just way better economics. The free trade advantage is clear.
In the end, if you don't have tariffs, U.S. companies can make stuff for less and charge U.S. consumers less. And U.S. consumers will have more money to spend on a new TV or a pair of shoes or dinner out or a pair of sunglasses. Speaking of which, maybe I should have spent more than $10 on this pair of sunglasses because I love them. I think they look awesome, but they turn my skin green.
They turn your skin green?
Yes. And I would hazard a guess that the $173 pair does not turn people's skin green. I mean, I don't know.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Swell Investing, an impact investing platform blending purpose and profit. Invest in high-growth companies improving the world without checking your values at the door. Claim a $50 bonus through swellinvesting.com/money.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.